From our studios in the Motor City, this is Autoline. Here now is John McElroy.
Thanks for joining us here at Autoline Detroit. You know, we've gotten through the first half of 2011, and a lot of new cars have come out. In fact, believe it or not, in the U.S. market, there's more than one new vehicle coming out every single week. So there's a lot to talk about what's going on. And joining me today for that discussion of all the new cars that have come out so far this year are Tony Swann from Car and Driver Magazine. Great having you here, Tony.
Good to be here.
Again. And we've also got Eddie Alterman, also the editor of Car and Driver Magazine. Eddie, great having you back here.
Thanks,
again.
John. Yeah, it's good to be here.
And I should also mention, too, that the three of us are on the jury for the North American Car and Truck of the Year Awards, and we'll be voting on those awards later this year. But this is sort of a mid-year preview. And so you guys have driven all kinds of vehicles right now. Eddie, anything that really jumps out at you?
You know, I think what's really interesting is the dynamic happening in the C segment of cars, or what used to be called compacts. They've grown quite a bit. They've gotten more expensive, much more feature-rich.
Give us some examples of what you mean by C-class cars.
C-class cars like a Ford Focus, a Honda Civic, a Chevrolet Cruze.
Hyundai Sonata.
Hyundai Elantra. Sonata is okay. More mid-size, okay. Sort of C-D segment cars. So that's sort of the classification there. But everything has been shuffled in that segment. And where the Honda Civic was far and away the best car in that segment, the best-selling car, now everything's kind of been reshuffled. Ford Focus really stands out as a winner to me. It's fantastic in terms of its vehicle dynamics. It does have a couple weak spots, but such as the dual-clutch automatic and the kind of clumsy My Ford Touch infotainment system. But, you know, you take those options off and you have a cheaper, better car. So it only strengthens its position in the market.
You like the Focus, too?
I think the Focus is really one of the achievements this year, and I would say it's certainly a very strong candidate for
car of the year.
2012 car of the
Did
year.
Did I, prematurely declare it the winner just now? I may have.
We're not trying to influence anybody that the Focus is better, but the point that Eddie just touched on about infotainment, it was interesting. You know, we had Derek Kuzak, the head of product development worldwide for Ford here recently. And he's talking about the sync system and so on, and it is complicated. And Ford is advocating that buyers of these systems should have to go to school at the dealer. And I think that some system that requires schooling in order to operate, you know, there's something wrong with that design.
It might be flawed.
But, I would certainly fail because I'm a Luddite. But the point is that Derek was advocating the importance of information and entertainment for the driver rather than other aspects, you know, attributes that we hold dear, which is the driving experience. So I agree that that's a soft point with the Focus and with other current Ford products.
Yeah, it didn't bother me that much. Maybe I went to school, but I love the Ford Focus. I think it's a terrific car. Compare that, though, to a new competitor or a refreshed competitor, the Honda Civic that's out right now.
It's almost like they traded places. The Civic used to be really an engaging, very light, fun to drive, very well-tuned chassis. Now it's sort of like had all the fun sucked out of it, and it's just an incredible step backward for that vehicle and a depressing one.
The impression that we keep talking about a Car and Driver is that somehow Honda seems to want to become Toyota with these bland products that are probably going to be pretty reliable, not reflecting on Toyota's recent travails, but that our character is just absent. And that is certainly true of the Civic. I think disappointment is an awfully strong word, but it's pretty close to that.
I should say, however, that the Civic Si is pretty darn good. You know,
that's the high-performance version.
Exactly. It's almost sort of like what VW is doing in that same segment with Jetta versus GLI. The Jetta is very dumbed down, and that's a whole other show probably. But they're still retaining, you know, the independent rear end for the GLI, and they're making that a true enthusiast machine.
Well, that's interesting, though, about the SI. They made some detail improvements and everything, but in terms of its performance, it's competing with the Volkswagen GTI and with the Mazda Speed 3. It's in that segment, and it is not a performance competitor for either.
That's true. That's true. But it is so much better than the mainstream Civics that I think it's worth mentioning.
Okay, as long as we're talking C-class cars like the Focus and the Civic, what about the Hyundai Elantra?
Really, really strong. I mean, it's sort of like they tick all the boxes, you know. The Korean cars are coming on so forcefully now. And the one thing I will say about the Elantra is it lacks flow. And that's sort of a very...
Explain that. What do you mean by lacking flow?
That harmony of controls, the predictability and linearity of the steering, the braking, the powertrain, and the chassis, those are the things that get honed and say, like, you know, the Focus really has great flow. It's got that terrific mechanical character where everything just feels right. The Elantra doesn't quite have that tuning yet, but it ticks all the boxes for sure.
Ticks all the boxes, and of course, it looks pretty damn good.
It looks great,
which you know, that's a big plus. So
styling
whether we
counts.
Like it or not, styling is still a key factor.
It's got a rear view camera. It's got heated rear seats. I mean, the feature content in this class is just unbelievable.
That's something that Hyundai has really been able to do with a lot of its recent products, too, and that's where they trump a lot of other manufacturers.
I would agree, and I would also say that the one failing that I see, it's not failing. The one thing where Hyundai cannot really claim to be a benchmark is in chassis dynamics. I don't think they're quite there yet. I wonder if it's in their rush to get their products to market, maybe they should have spent another 3 or 4 months at the proving ground to really get that synergy of how everything flows together.
And that does take a long time and a lot of evolution. And they bring cars to the market that don't fully have all the corners finished, and they keep working on them through model years. It's a continuous improvement cycle. So,
and improved they have, but I don't entirely agree with you in terms of the Sonata, which is very good. You know, we did a comparison with the Honda Accord, which is, in our view, has been the benchmark dynamically in that segment, and the Sonata was right there. So it's pretty good. And the Kia Optima.
I would still say the Accord's more fluid, and it's a little bit more. It's lighter on its feet.
But they're close. The Sonata is close. And, of course, at the end of the day, it really kind of came down to styling. And Eddie says, well, we can't just pick it because it has better styling. Well, this is what influences purchase decisions.
What else do you guys see out there that you like? Let's talk about the domestics. Chrysler's got a couple of new vehicles out there, the new 300.
They really, I think, spent their money in the right place. Marchionne said back at that first big day-long powwow 2 years ago, he said, you know, this project was far too down the road for me to kill it because it's so expensive. But they really did focus very, very intently on the interior, on chassis dynamics. And, you know, the old one was great, and it was a classic American rear-drive, front-engine V8, but you always felt like you're driving your dad's car. You know, the high sills and the kind of big play in the steering, it's all been sort of tightened up and tamped down, and it really, I think, is a great evolution of the previous vehicle.
Quality of materials within is much improved, and I think that that's a plus for them, too. And I guess that talking about Chrysler and Fiat and so on kind of brings us to the 500, which is an interesting player.
Cinquecento.
See. And I view that car as a novelty, and I think that the bloom is going to come off just because of the limited utility there. And also the performance is, you know, modest, to be kind.
100 horsepower, you know, it's light, but at the same time, I think Tony's right. You know, these things have sort of a shelf life or a cute sell-by date of 18 months or so, and you have to keep refreshing it. And MINI has, I think, done an amazing job of allowing people to customize their cars and keep the things fresh. We have yet to see that from Fiat. We have yet to see that kind of push into the market. Now, of course, MINI has blazed quite a trail, but you don't see Fiat coming with this really creative, fun advertising, you know, all the kind of, I would say, culture around the car yet. It might be on its way.
It might, but of course, you know, they've had problems launching the car. They can't get their dealer network lined up, or they've been slow in doing that. So I'm not sure that we've really seen enough of them on the road, and I haven't seen much of any advertising. There's also a Cabrio coming, and then a performance version, the Arbart. So I think they will extend the model range. What I find about the car is I like it. Overall, I think it's pretty good. But with an automatic transmission, it's slow as molasses.
It's glacial. 0 to 60 is June, you know.
Yeah, right.
And there are limits to what people will accept their fuel economy notwithstanding.
P.J. O'Rourke did a piece for us on that, and he said, for a car with so much personality, it ought to have more personality.
That's a good way to put it. My only fear for them is I think Fiat has set overly ambitious sales targets for that car in the U.S. market, and they may be disappointed in that regard. It may sell well, but I don't think it's going to sell to the level they expect.
And there might be a great initial bump and a lot of pent-up demand for it, and, you know, I think the timing is right, but you know, extending it and making it into a fully fledged brand, that's going to really be the question.
Mm-hmm. What about sticking with the Chrysler group, Dodge Charger?
I think the same thing holds true of the Charger as for the 300, don't you, Tom?
I think so, too. And I think that, the little styling tweaks that they've made to it, they retained that, city with broad shoulders kind of character. But it looks better. It looks a little more refined, and of course the dynamics and so on are similar to the Chrysler. I mean, there isn't too much distinction there. And of course, you can get the SRT8, so that you can listen to Huma,
right?
Which is one of my favorite tunes, rapidly disappearing.
Yeah, I can't wait for the 8-speed transmission to come in though, because the V6 model, which is affordable and it's a good engine, it replaces a whole plethora of engine V6s.
Several V6s of which they were previously proud.
Right. It makes its power up high, and accessing that power with the existing 5-speed is not all that easy, and it's a little frustrating. But it's just nice to have that format be as healthy as it is. You know, Ford discontinued the Panther platform. Rear drive V8 front engine. And it's good that there seems to be signs of health in that segment.
I agree. I think they've done a good job of refreshing the Charger. I think they spent their money very wisely. The only thing I don't like gets to what you were talking about. I think in calibrating the powertrain for the ultimate in fuel economy, it's what I call a sticky calibration. I feel like the torque converter in the transmission's always locked up, and when I step into it, it's like a hesitation before it really goes. And I think an 8-speed automatic transmission will allow them to open up that calibration, so to speak,
and make it
a lot more friendly to drive.
That'll help. But one of the things that we see practically across the board with automatic transmissions, they want to get you to top gear by the end of the driveway.
Exactly, as fast as possible. And so you're always, to get meaningful power out of that V6, right now with the 5-speed, you got to drop down 2 gears because it's always getting you in top gear.
We haven't talked about anything from General Motors yet. They've got the Buick Verano and the Chevy Sonic coming out. Tony, any thoughts on those cars?
Well, the only version of the Verano that I've driven is the one with the manual transmission. Bless their hearts for doing something
That's
like that.
That's the Regal you drove.
Well, yes. Okay.
The Verano's the smaller one.
Different car, though. But with the manual transmission is not well matched to that engine, and it just is a disappointing thing to drive. But of course, what they're doing there, it's amazing. These cars just look terrific inside and out.
And now, with a $24,000 C-segment entry, they're really taking that compact class or small midsize class to another level. So I think there's really nothing in there except for maybe an Acura or two that can compete. Certainly nothing American. I mean, you can get a Focus up to $28,000, but now you've got this Buick that really is very quiet. I think it's the right size, and it's an interesting foray into that market.
I haven't driven the car yet, but some people have said they don't think it's quite a Buick. Do you think a small car can be a Buick?
What does that mean anymore?
That's right. Yeah. Depends on your era. I think of the Electra 225. Forget
right.
that.
That was not
It's
small.
Over.
It's a different age.
Yeah.
That's right. Not just a different day. It's a different age. How about the Chevrolet Sonic, which used to be the Aveo, and that earned not a great reputation for itself
in
the market?
I think that's going to be kind of the enthusiast starter vehicle, sort of like the Nissan Sentra SER was back in the 90s. They've got the cruise engine in it. It's lightweight. It's got that great power-to-weight ratio that you don't get in what we're calling the B segment, which is Honda Fit. Mazda 2 is very light, and the Sonic is heavier than that. But what's interesting about the Sonic is the up-powered version, the enthusiast version, is also the Eco Champ. So I think they've got it
nailed. EcoChamp, meaning that not only do you get performance, MPG, you get good fuel economy,
Exactly.
I would agree with that. You know, I think that lends it, that kind of a car lends itself to simple customization with, you know, exhaust and wheels and maybe even headlamps, some of the stuff that might have been done by enthusiasts 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah, and it looks great. I think it looks cool, and I think it will erase the stigma of the Aveo.
The Aveo was just a cheap Korean car. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it was really pretty forgettable. And this car, it's a whole different ballgame. And also, they're going to assemble them in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's very telling that General Motors can now assemble a B-class car, you know, subcompact car in the United States with UAW labor and not losing money on it. That's a sea change in what's happened at General Motors in the last 2 years.
Absolutely. And that might be the most significant thing about this car.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we've talked about, you know, B and C class cars and even A, I guess, with is the Fiat 500 is no, that's a B class. Let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Let's go to luxury, and I'll throw one out there, the new Audi A7.
That's a stunner. It's just fantastic looking, and the utility is off the charts. They've taken that kind of coupe profile that the Mercedes-Benz CLS pioneered, the four-door coupe profile. And I think they've taken it to another level.
Well, it's a gorgeous car, and it's gorgeous inside, which is something that Audi has been doing so well, especially like that wood trim where you can actually feel the grain in the wood. Amazing. And I love the performance of the car. Some of our colleagues have been saying that you get into crosswind situations at fairly high speeds, it can get a little dicey. And that I think you were talking about the tires. I found the dynamics to be very good. It's heavy, but it's so say they all.
Yeah, what Tony's referring to is in my test drive of the car, we had a pouring rain, and I was driving down the freeway at 70 miles an hour. The car started hydroplaning, tugging it this way and that way. It wasn't, you know, too bad, but it's been years since I've been in a car that started hydroplaning at highway speeds. And that's a factor of the tires on the car, which are very low-profile sport tires. Not anything bad with the car, but nonetheless, I found that to be an odd selection. And
well, a lot of those cars, though, when they get to dealers, they're going to go out the door with all-season tires on them. That's what the dealers clamor for.
Mm-hmm. What I think is interesting, too, about this is the pricing. You know, it starts right around 60, and a well-optioned one, I think, will be mid-60s. We drove one that was, I think, 65 and had all the stuff on it. A similar CLS from Mercedes will be 20 grand more or 15 grand more. So that's kind of a reversal for Audi because, you know, typically they are very expensive when you start piling options on. And what's also interesting about Audi is the way they're dealing with the odd number cars, the interstitial, you know, the A5 between the 4 and the 6, very expressive. The 7 between the 6 and the 8, very expressive cars.
My only question about the A7 is whether the public who buys big sedans like that will warm up to a fastback look, hatchback, fastback look, rather than a more formal notchback with a trunk.
I'll tell you, the Panamera is not great looking, but it's selling like hotcakes.
It is.
And that's the same format, same layout.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point.
And, well, is that how perceivable is that going to be when you think about the CLS, which has got that shape, even though it's got a formal trunk?
Right. Well, like I said, I'll be interested to see how that kind of a customer reacts to the car and how well it sells. I think it'll do pretty well only because Audi seemingly is on a roll these days. They just keep knocking them out of the park.
Yeah. It's the American rejection of hatchbacks in general, I mean, I think is diminishing. You know, the younger buyers coming into the market, there's more acceptance there. Although, you know, you look at the difference between the Golf and the Jetta, 6-to-1 Jetta here, and in Europe it's vice versa.
Well, we talked about the Mercedes CLS, and that's been redone for this year, too. I haven't been in the car. Have either of you been in it?
I have not.
No, nor have I. No.
Okay, how about the Mercedes?
Swiftly along.
The SLK.
Have not driven.
No, that just came out, right. So I guess we don't have a whole lot to talk about that. But also in the luxury end, I guess, is the Nissan Murano, what they're calling the Cross Cabrio. Yeah. You laugh, Eddie. Why?
Well, we just did a story on that called The Oddity, and it was a takeoff on Homeric epic verse. So it was trying to capture the absurdity of that vehicle. But there really is nothing like it. I think that it will find its buyer. I mean, it's very luxurious inside. It could almost be an Infiniti. And there's really no crossover that offers, a drop top. And I think for a certain Orange County housewife, they might really enjoy it.
I agree. I think that the buyers, all three of them, will really enjoy it. This thing is absurd. I don't get it at all. It's really expensive. I forget what the numbers are, but it's by far the most expensive thing in that lineup, the Murano lineup.
But absurdity makes the world go round. I mean, I'm driving a G55 AMG Mercedes-Benz. Quite an absurd vehicle. Also quite enjoyable.
Yeah, you could look at certain political candidates. No names.
Yeah, what I like about the Murano Cross Cabrio is, thank goodness, the industry has finally come out with a four-door convertible again. I mean, it's been ages since
there was the Wrangler.
Well, yeah, but yeah, I hear you. But I also agree with you, Tony. As much as I appreciate it for being so different, I think this thing will be pretty much sales-proof.
I think it's going to tank, yeah, absolutely.
Let's see, we also have seen a new Impreza from Subaru. What do y'all think of that?
Go.
Yeah, a little less expressive, more in line with the legacy. I have not driven it yet, but the Impreza has gotten softer and softer with each successive generation. So I don't hold out a lot of hope that this is going to be kind of the second coming of that homologated WRX.
Well, I do think that the one thing I'm glad about when you get into the STI end of it, the really high-performance one, is that they went back to a sedan body style for it. And I like that snarky little sedan look, although living with it, I mean, that's really a young man's car.
Well, I'm really impressed by Subaru these days. Somebody forgot to tell them there was a raging recession going on worldwide. They just sailed through that, no problems.
They stuck to their guns. They didn't go up market. They talked about value. They did not raise prices. And they have such a strange but useful mix of products appealing to so many different constituencies. Very, very interesting product planning. And
there has been some rumor of a possible two-wheel drive Subaru coming on. I think that'd be a mistake for them. They have done so well with all-wheel drive on all of their products across the board, and they're sitting in the catbird seat. The last 2 years, they've exceeded their sales expectations and records, and it just keeps going.
As my dear mother would say, let's disagree to disagree. The rear drive FT86 Subaru Sports Coupe, I think, will be a stunner. It's great because they're lowering the engine, they're lowering the center of gravity height, and I think it's just going to be amazing.
It's possible for them to expand their whole franchise doing that. We'll see.
Okay, Volkswagen making a big push in the American market. The new Passat's out. We're going to see a new Beetle, totally refreshed Beetle. Your thoughts?
Passat is interesting that they have to do a U.S. version of it because it got so expensive in Europe. And it's hard to see where they took cost out of it. I think they've done a good job in that respect. It's very bland looking. A lot of room inside of it.
Especially rear leg room.
Yeah, they're hitting the right boxes there, and we'll see. Very bland to look at, though.
It certainly is a good value, but I think when you get a little bit deeper, the reason guys like me bought Volkswagens is because they were really the cheap European alternative, even though they were more expensive than a similar segment Asian vehicle. That hardcore VW guy is looking at this Passat and saying, wait, they've made an Impala here, or they've made, a Camry. Where does that leave me? And I think that's a dangerous game to play. And if you are putting VW now into really the thick of it with Camry and Accord, it has to have quality to beat the band. And I think that that's going to be a big challenge for them. What's, I think, still kind of heartening is the fact that they're continuing to do GTI and GLI. And the diesel powertrains are fantastic in those cars. But, if you're going into the thick of battle with Honda and increasingly General Motors and Ford, you've got to have your quality up to snuff. And we'll see if Chattanooga, where they're building this car, can do that.
Yeah, good point. And thoughts on the new Beetle?
Well, I've only seen it in auto shows, and I think that they made good decisions in terms of this profile. It looks a little less cute and a little more up-to-date, aggressive. I think that part that'll play, and existing powertrains are okay. I don't know any more than that.
I don't know.
I've only seen pictures of it, too. I do like the pictures, though. It is more purposeful than cartoony.
Yes,
and
exactly.
That's a good move for the car.
I saw it at New York, and I like the looks of it. And again, one of the problems with the current one is that, you know, you have that profile dating back to the beginning of time and before World War II. And in certain situations, when the sun's up here, you've always got there's too much window there. And so reducing that roof line is going to help that particular aspect.
Yeah, there's a lot of solar gain in that car, and the dashboard is so long. I mean, you can sleep.
To get that windshield.
Yeah.
Well, look, we've gotten through an awful lot. We didn't get through everything, but as I said before, there's so much new product coming out. We're going to have to do this again at the end of the year. But Tony Swann from Car and Driver, Eddie Alterman from Car and Driver, thanks for coming on AutoLine Detroit. It's been great having you here again.
Thank you, Tony.
And thank all of you for tuning in.